This is the regular meeting of the Rancho Murrieta Community Services District Improvements Committee for February 1st. Our first item on the agenda is consider finding that as a result of the COVID-19 emergency meeting in person would present imminent risks to the health or safety of attendees, and the meeting is authorized to be held by teleconference pursuant to government code. Any dissent? You good, Marty?
I'm good.
And you're good too there, Randy? Agree?
And I am good with it. So let's move on to comments from the public. Anything, Amelia?
I have a comment.
Yes, John Sullivan has a comment.
Could I make a comment when we get to the item number 7 in regard to recycle water, rather than spend time before the meat of the meeting in case you run long?
Okay. I got it noted. Anyone else, Amelia?
That's all.
All right, let's move on to our monthly update. Michael?
Yes, good morning. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
All right, so staff and I, over the last month, have been going over the various infrastructure that the district has, water, sewer, storm, admin, and security. And we've been updating the replacement values and useful life of these various components. I think this time around, I spent a lot of time with the actual staff that actually works on the equipment. So I think we're getting a little closer to a little bit more realistic values for our reserve study. Next step is going to be Paula and I getting together, and she's going to be assigning these values of the respective years. And we're going to get together and work with Tom on developing a funding strategy based on what the board's target funding levels would be for each department. So those are next steps coming up. So we are working hard on that. It's been a very informative process for me to get a better idea of what we have in the field and what some of the assumptions were for values on the infrastructure. Now, as time goes on, I'm going to be pushing for more and more condition assessment, because the more condition assessment we do, the more we actually know, and the more we know, the more accurate and realistic our reserve study is going to be in future iterations. For our SB 170 funded projects, we held our first kickoff meeting with West Yost and Associates, just basically to determine the boundaries of the study and to determine what data West Yost needs in order to do the life cycle analysis comparing UV disinfection versus sodium hypochlorite for the recycled water. I'm going to talk a little bit more as we move forward for the water treatment facility hypochlorite conversion. We're going to put together an RFP response team or review team. No update on the groundless intake safety project. I have to circle around with HDR and see where we are on that process. Laguna Joaquin, I felt we had a very good meeting with RMA last week. And we had several representatives from Solitude, including a couple of biologists. And it was determined that the root cause of the midge problem is most likely more so the planktonic algae in the water column than the sediment. Due in part that the sediment has a very low volatile content, a very low organic content based on all the samples. Hold on. Excuse me. And so I think it was pretty unanimous that dredging the Laguna Joaquin is probably not the best way forward at this time. And so I think what Army intends, excuse me, someone just, they just need to call me for whatever reason, turn that off. And so I think we're going to get a prescription, or the Army is going to get a prescription that's going to include an algicide to try to reduce the planktonic algae in the water column in combination with the blue dye that will cut off the food supply for the midges. And so I think it made sense to move forward with that prior to planning to dredge the Laguna Joaquin. As far as CSD is concerned, we don't need to dredge Laguna Joaquin. We've got plenty of room left for our stormwater needs. So I think Marty can also conclude it was a pretty good meeting. And so I'm interested to see what that prescription is and see how we can move forward.
Yeah, Marty, you want to comment?
I completely agree. I think even the people that live around the lake that were invited to the meeting understood the issue that excreting the sediment from the lake wasn't it didn't have a certainty to it that would eliminate the midges in the future. The biologists thought there is a chance that the midge flies could come back even if we excavated all that material. So I'm anxious to see what comes forward and what the costs are to make it happen.
Yeah, and that's a very good point. That the expense could be out there, and then we wouldn't be any closer than we are now. So I've faith that moving forward with the biologist recommendation, that hopefully they'll be able to see a midge reduction. Moving on to more of our infrastructure rehab, we'll discuss the valve in the next section, valve replacement. The wastewater tertiary wet well feed pumps. Board approved the replacement of those pumps with Kirby pump. And I believe Kirby picked up the pumps yesterday, and if they didn't, they're going to do it today to get started on that so we can have those ready for recycled water season. The board did ask, when we were talking about the membranes, what would be the replacement, the full replacement quote. So we did receive a quote from GE for $766,296 to replace all five modules at the plant. That also includes some necessary refurbishment, which I'm not sure what the detail is on that, but that's a rough replacement cost should they need to be replaced. They are getting towards the end of their useful life, but they're still performing well. And our increased cleans and regime is bearing fruit, and we're going to keep these membranes performing as long as possible. But we do now have a replacement cost for those, so we have a number. And likely, we wouldn't replace all of the modules at the same time. We would just take the worst ones and replace those component-wise. Our site development updates. At Riverview, a retaining wall construction has started on the phase 1A section of the project for retreats. The north portion of the project grading has been shut down for the winter, at least for the time being. And that's in part based on the notice of violation and their inability to keep sediment from running off the site. I felt that they have addressed the NOV. A few little items, but overall they're complying. Water main and the water service installation is occurring on Via Robia, and they're preparing to install the hydrants. I think they have actually installed a couple hydrants since the time that I wrote that. Let's see. Taco Bell, the grease interceptor has been installed, sewer lines and water lines. And there's no update on Circle K Shell. So if there's no questions, we can move on to the next section and discuss some of the other items in more detail.
I have a question.
Yeah, sure.
Can we jump? Can I just ask the question on the methoprene, the material that they discuss for the midge fly treatment?
Yeah.
Is there a cost per gallon associated with that? Or I noticed that they said that there's it's best used at about one part per million, which would be a significant amount of gallons per treatment, I think. So do you know what that costs per gallon?
We were not given costs at that meeting.
Okay. And then, so
we weren't told it was more expensive than the previous larvicide they used.
Okay. So on a one part per million, it would be about 65 gallons per treatment, I'm assuming. That's how they calculated it. Anyway, update on the Taco Bell. Did we, Michael, get the fire department's signed off plans?
Not at this time. Not, you know, last time I checked, it was not signed off by the fire department, and I don't know why.
Okay. Would you mind just letting me know when you get that set that's approved by Sac Metro? That's got that hot tap for the fire riser. You weren't here when we started that discussion, but we have a fire riser to put in theoretically into the landscaping there just north of the drive aisle. And it's about a 28-foot run from the connection. And we've been waiting for Sac Metro to sign off the plans to ensure that they're comfortable with that location for the fire riser.
Yeah, I don't know who would get that news first. Wouldn't the developer get the news first?
Well, the architect has not been overly communicative.
I see. Well, if I do see that piece of news, I'll be sure and let you know.
Thank you.
And getting back to the methoprene, and you know, I think one thing that we didn't address was there were some questions last time the RMA tried to apply, you know, the insecticide. It was not very successful, but that's not exactly true. If you look at the numbers, you could actually see a reduction. And I think, you know, both the RMA did, you know, mention, and it was mentioned by, I believe, Solitude, that had they applied at the recommended regime, they might have had better numbers. So okay. It wasn't necessarily a failure of the last thing that they applied. I just don't think it was applied to the level that Solitude had recommended. But if you looked at the actual numbers that were shared of the reduction, it was actually making some headway.
Okay, great.
So I think that, but I think that the insecticide is kind of a, if the algicide doesn't work, I think you move on to the insecticide.
Makes sense. So a question on the membranes, and maybe this is for Paula or Tom. In the last replacement study, how do these numbers compare with what we plugged in the reserve study? Do you know, or is this the ballpark? Or
this is Tom. I don't have those numbers off the top of my head. I haven't looked at that study in a while. We can definitely come back at the board meeting and update that question.
I'm just curious as to how close we were. This is a big number, and if they have to be replaced every 7 or 10 years, my lightning quick mind tells me that we should, for this stuff alone, we should be putting away $100,000 a year, and I'm sure we're not. But I'm just curious as to how accurate we were the last go around. Now we've got a real number, and that'll change in 5 years too. So, but it's a moving target. Michael.
In regard to that, do we have a standby vacuum pump at the water treatment plant number one for those 5 modules? Is there one vacuum pump per, or are they shared?
They're duplex for redundancy.
So is there just 2 of them?
Yeah, I believe so. I think they're called permeate pumps.
And do we have a spare?
I do not believe so.
Okay.
So we can operate. You already have, the correct amount of redundancy. One pump can do everything, and you have a spare already in place. That's considered redundancy. I mean, we could, if the district wanted to, we could procure a third pump and have it on the shelf.
That's mounted. They're both mounted.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So,
John, shut up.
If we're doing an expansion, if we're adding a 6th module, which based on 4.4 million gallons for 5 modules, is that roughly 900,000 gallons per module?
I'm assuming so. I think what you're getting at is, would we need to update the capacity of the system?
Well, when we indicate that we want to move forward with the expansion, my understanding was that one additional pump is necessary. And I'm wondering if we shouldn't just suggest that we get that thing priced out so it's not under any emergency, just to know what that number is. And if it's a reasonable number for a standby, it could come out of the expansion as a standby, and then it would be paid for as part of that, part of that standby money for the expansion. And it wouldn't be money out of the district's pocket, but it would be prepaid as to the expansion of adding another 900,000 gallons. So I'm assuming that the filters are proportional. One pocket is what? One pocket is roughly 150,000. Is that about right?
I don't have that in front of me, John. But I think I know where you're getting. I don't know for sure if the pumps were designed such that, one pump could actually go up to the expanded amount. I don't even know that. It's possible that the permeate pump is designed, as we put in more modules and run more water through, that it could actually meet that capacity. I don't know that. It's possible that, when you expand the capacity, and let's say that we, remove water plant 2 someday in the future and expand water plant 1, which I think was the plan originally, that you would take a look at all the supporting pumps, including the back pulse and the permeate pumps, and you would ensure that you have sufficient capacity in those pumps. And that's something that would happen when you did the study and design for upsizing the system at that time.
So it seems to me, just from the last 3.5 or 4 years of operation, that water treatment plant number two has come in quite handy when we've needed to do analysis of cleaning the modules and the uptime that plant. I mean, I think the uptime of that plant's not 95%. So.
Yeah. And I will say that plant two right now is doing a better job removing manganese, and we rely on that during the summer months to remove manganese. One of the thoughts that I had moving forward would be if we removed plant two from service eventually and expanded plant one, which actually makes more sense. And if there's, you know, as we expand plant one, we probably add a third permeate pump, and, you know, we can take certain modules out of service and still run other modules, but we would utilize potentially the sedimentation basins from plant two prior to plant one to remove a lot of the manganese prior to it getting to the membranes. So we'd be effectively utilizing portions of plant two. We wouldn't be utilizing the filter anymore, but we'd probably be utilizing the sedimentation tanks for manganese removal.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah. Anyways, that's a little ways down the road. And that would be part of an engineered study to determine what's the most cost-effective way forward as the filter gets harder and harder to find replacement parts for. And we move forward with the membranes, which I think was the original plan, which does have a lot of merit.
Amelia, any hands or chats for Michael?
No hands, no chats.
All right, Michael, let's move on to the valve replacement.
Okay, so as you may have read in the memorandum, there was an incredible amount of additional expense on this project. It's a tough pill to swallow, but having done underground work for, you know, very long time, unfortunately, there's conditions when you start going past 10 feet, you know, any underground conditions a lot of times can be unknown. And conditions were much worse than I had anticipated when we originally set forth for this emergency project. I think it was a good thing that we did the project when we did, based on the loss of fines and the saturation of the soil. We kind of had two things going on. We had a leaking valve, and then we've got a small crack in our storm drain. So the leaking valve was letting water out and transporting fines through that storm drain. It was just a matter of time before we had some major sinkholes in that road. So I'm glad that the board approved that emergency project when they did. Now we've stopped the water leak. We have to go and take a look at how can we repair that storm drain from the, what makes most sense is repairing it from the inside. And it'll probably be some kind of a grout patch or something, or potentially a cured in place patch performed from inside the storm drain. But, I appreciate the support of the board addressing this important emergency project. It's unfortunate that it did, pretty much doubled in price, but things do start to accelerate when you get to that depth. If you have, material that you have to build back up underneath pavement, it's not just that couple of feet. You have to go, pretty much all the way down 15 feet. So it accelerates the cost significantly. I had a long discussion with M3 and the contractor, and I believe, that they did their best to get that project done as fast as possible. But when you get that deep, it just that the labor, the labor basically doubled. And, there's a lot of factors that you have to take in consideration, like, safety, additional time to seal up the pit every night. It was primarily the labor that increased the cost of this project.
So chime in here, Marty, but this is totally different than my contracting world. I'm curious as to what kind of a contract we had with the contractor. I would love to bid on work, and then if it was harder than what I thought it was going to be, go to the owner and tell him my price is doubled because it was harder than my bid. I mean, that causes all kinds of problems with the system, in that, okay, all I have to do is turn in the low bid and I'm going to get paid whatever my costs are. Maybe what I'm asking for is I'd like to see a copy of our contract forms that we typically sign with contractors. I can't believe there's something. Did we misrepresent what was there? Is that what we're saying, that we told them it was going to be dry and there wasn't going to be any sloughing? And I'm a little bit confused on our system here, that we would sign a contract with someone to do something for X amount of dollars, and then it turns out that it was harder than what they thought, and so we're going to pay them more. What am I missing here, Michael?
Well, it was what you're missing is we don't know what the conditions were like underneath. The only way we could get bids was through a time and materials contract. So it was, they gave us a bid. Basically, we asked for a bid for, like, okay, if this was just a normal dry hole, and that was the only way we were able to compare the bids, because if we were going to try to make some assumptions, the bids would have gone all over the place. In my opinion.
I remember asking that question at this very meeting, I guess it was a month ago, and I was under the understanding that they gave us, they had quantities and unit costs for each item, and the basis of the payment would be time and materials using those unit prices. Is that how it actually turned out?
Yeah, the prices didn't go up. What went up was the quantities.
Yes, that's my understanding of what was going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't know how to bid that, because the conditions were, unknown. You know, we all hoped it was going to be, standard conditions and, meet that price, but those conditions had changed.
Can I jump in here for a second? Mm-hmm. The only way that we could have isolated the costs were for the district to open up the hole and shore it and then have everybody take a look at it. That would have been weeks of having that pit open before you had a contract, if the staff couldn't, undertake that project. It's kind of like when we did the Cantova lift station, and the plans showed the force main in the wrong place. Once you got into that situation, it was all hands on deck. Everybody had to jump in and do the best we could to bring that back into service as quickly as possible. So the numbers just ratchet right up really fast once you don't have what you think you have, just from my experience.
And this is Tom, I want to chime in, that the valve, the butterfly valve that had failed, was actually falling apart. It's connected like the rear end differential on the rear end on a vehicle, where you have about six large bolts. and they're bolting these two pieces of steel together, which houses the butterfly valve. And one of the bolts had actually rusted off. And what's more concerning is if we have a bunch of those same valves in the ground and we're doing some analysis on, you asked the question about how deep that is and how many we have that are deep, Randy. We're going to do some work on identifying, you know, how many of these valves we have that are deep under the ground. And at some point in time, maybe test the dirt around the valves to see if it's super wet or not, because this valve had been leaking for some time. And, you know, I haven't heard any from anybody in the fairways that housing development since, but chances are that valve was, you know, the water's been leaking for some time, which is probably affecting the water pressure for the homes. And Michael, feel free to chime in, but I'm concerned, one, about the cost overruns and how quickly it happened. Michael and I have been talking about that, but also I'm concerned of the condition of the valve we pulled out. My fear is that we have a lot of those same vintage valves in the ground, and if they begin to leak, they'll probably rust away fast. So we need to start putting leak detection systems throughout our system. And Michael and I have talked about that. We got to isolate some of these valves and make sure that they're not falling apart on us.
I've got some concerns that valve was that deep in the first place. And I want to find out how much of that we have. I'm hoping it's just some little spot that, you know, there was a conflict and they had to go lower. But yeah, 15 feet, it's odd to have water infrastructure 15 feet deep. And I'm hoping there's not a whole lot of that we find out.
Well, we have the problem that we've got a 14-inch water line that goes underneath the river. So there's a lot of deep stuff down just north of the river, west of Granley's, and then into the south. So you've got that situation where it's, I would be willing to say it's, you know, deeper than what you just dealt with.
All right. I don't think I got my, again, in my world, there's no such thing as time and materials based on units. I'll take this offline and try and figure it out because it's still confusing me. But I would, Tom, when you get a chance, if you could email me our stock contract that we sign with contractors, I'd like to take a look at it, because this whole concept of it is foreign to me, but I don't want to spend any more time on it right now. Michael, let's move on to discuss team to evaluate sodium hypochlorite design services RFP.
Okay, well, we received 3 RFP responses for the hypochlorite conversion at the water treatment plant. And I'd like to put together a team. If you, Randy, or Marty are interested in being RFP raters, include you on the team. I'd like to be on the team. I'd like to have Travis, our plant operator, be in on that as well. And Tom, if he'd like to be a part of that. So what I'd like to do is set up a meeting. We'll pass out the RFP, or I can just send them off to people, and then we can meet after we've rated them. It's as people wish. I'd like to get this turned around probably next couple of weeks so we can move forward with that project. I just want to see if there's any interest in being part of that RFP rating team.
I think, Marty, you're the RFP guy. Marty's.
I'd be happy to.
Okay, yeah. So we got Marty, myself, Travis, Tom. Did you want to be on the team?
Yeah.
And Tom. Okay.
And again, this is the design work for going from chlorine gas to sodium hypochlorite down at the water treatment. So
plans and specs, right?
Pardon me?
Yes.
Plans and specs.
Right, and different from how we tried to do the hydrochloride conversion at the wastewater plant, we're going to design this in front instead of as we go.
Very good. Sounds like you've got your team. Let's move on to director and staff comments. First, we'll start with John wanted to speak to reclaimed water. Is that
thank you, Randy. Yes, I was hoping that there's a planning session or a strategic planning session that's going to happen soon. It is important from my perspective, and it will even probably come to light when you know exactly how we're treating the tertiary wastewater with whatever the ultimate upgrade is for UV versus hypochlorite. But we do need to know what the recycle water cost is, and we also need to know what a recycle EDU is. We have not dealt with that. We've ignored it now for 8 years, and so it's important that stay high on the priority list to get discussed and at least some decision made by the board on how recycled water will be treated from a sales point of view into the subdivisions, regardless of when that ultimately does or doesn't happen. That work needs to be agreed to because it affects the EDUs that are in the subdivisions that use purple pipe. So if you have for example, in the gardens, those lots are all less than 12,000 feet. They're like 0.9 EDUs, but you're taking 2/3 of the 0.9 away from the domestic water, and you're using potable water to serve the landscaping, but it is, in theory, purple pipe recycled water. So there's got to be a policy, and there's got to be a price. And so I would hope that we could get on with that discussion before you get to the rate setting for the 2022-2023 year. Thank you.
Okay. Director and staff comments, suggestions, starting with staff. Anybody have anything?
Yeah, I, this is Mike. I'd just like to, Randy, I'd be happy to meet with you, you know, sometime in the next few weeks to discuss contracting options. Because, you know, I want to make sure that, you know, you're in the know and that I can also maybe learn from some of your experience and advice as far as contracting moving forward. So I'd like to open that up to a meeting sometime if you'd like.
Sounds great. Thank you for that. Anyone else?
I'm good.
Director comments. Marty, anything?
Yeah, I heard Michael talk about reserves and condition assessments. I'm certainly in favor of that. Last time we were going through the reserves, I thought we didn't have a very good handle on what the replacement costs are actually for all the pieces out, especially the stuff that's in the ground. So I applaud that. The other one I wanted to see if we have anything on the horizon for replacing RMA's irrigation system that comes out of Laguna Joaquin. I want to know if that's on the immediate horizon to figure something out for that. And then lastly, I wanted to see what's the status of the east-west residences? What's going on there?
Anybody address any of that, Tom?
Let me give it a shot. I do know the RMA is hiring a landscape person to help work to redesign how they do irrigation and how much they irrigate as far as their turf goes. I know that they're working to try and reduce the amount of turf like we've asked them to do. As far as an alternative to pulling water from Laguna Joaquin versus pulling water from another location, we haven't really dove into that with them. We are working with our engineer to get some ideas for piping that would allow us to bring water into Laguna Joaquin in a different format rather than using the CIA ditch. And that's been a pretty long ongoing discussion, and we're hoping to get something from Joe in the next couple weeks about what he thinks is involved in designing the option. What was the second part of that question, Martin?
Number one was a condition assessment. The irrigation was number two. And then the third one, what's happening with the residences?
I don't really know what's going on with the residences other than what I've been hearing in the rumor mill. And I'm not going to talk about that. John Sullivan.
I can help you with that.
Okay, go ahead, John.
So the West Yost has been engaged and has been on the site to work on the drainage study that the county and the CSD require. They've also analyzed the shed, the watershed. That those numbers are being fed into a computer to determine whether we have a requirement to do significant on-site detention basins or not so extensive. And then there's some analysis being done on some of the downstream culverts that feed into Laguna Joaquin. And then they've done all the topographical work and all the survey work and the work under below Laguna Joaquin for the drainage out of the spillway into the drainage ditch that runs below Lookout Hill and then ultimately through Lone Pine Drive. So all that work on those drainage issues has been addressed, and now it's into analysis and design. So we're staying on track for hopefully having a summertime grading on residents east and west. The sewer analysis is being done on a project basis below, I want to say, Escuela Drive. And then I don't know, Tom, has anything been discussed in regard to looking at some of the manholes? Have we done anything on that?
No.
I think we're, you know, if we get into the wet regime, you know, we're prepared to put some flow meters in there where the district thinks that would be valuable to know the data on those. So they've been out searching for where they can find those to rent for the balance of the winter. Okay. And that's about all I know for today.
That's great. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Thanks for that.
This is Mike. I'd like to address Marty's first comment.
Okay.
Regarding condition assessment. We are going to be moving towards condition assessment, but I want to be clear that it's a pretty big effort based on the information that we have, which isn't a whole lot. You'll notice in the reserve study, the way that Associated Reserves had handled underground, you know, it's clearly, you know, it's enough to try to set a budget, but we really want to do better than that. So it's going to be many years of condition assessment. It's kind of like painting the Golden Gate Bridge. By the time you're done, painting the bridge, you kind of start all over again. So it's going to be an ongoing, arduous and long process, but I think it's going to pay off dividends in the future. But this is a, you know, this is a 4 to 5 year process.
I agree with that. It takes a long time, but some data is better than no data. So.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And I will say that, you know, this reserve study, I think, is going to be more accurate, but it's going to get a lot more accurate the more condition assessment that we do. And I want that to be clear.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. My only comment is in reference also to Marty's question about Laguna Joaquin, and that is that the RMA Maintenance Committee has been talking about this forever, but it appears that they're finally moving forward in hiring a landscape architect that's going to come up with a plan in order to do the drip system type irrigation that they want to do to conserve water. They'll no longer be able to draw out of Laguna Joaquin because that water just plugs up that type of system. So they're looking for a place to plug in to get potable or reclaimed water. And I'm sure that we'll have many discussions in, as this process goes along and the landscape architect comes up with various ideas on how to proceed. So,
do you mind if I comment on that real quick?
Certainly.
You said something about potable or reclaimed water. From my analysis, if the RMA were to begin using reclaimed water, we'd have to go to the state and have our permit modified because of where they would put the water is in the, you know, the medians and stuff that is directly tied to the drainage system for the recycled water. So I think their only option is potable water. And there's potable water access, you know, everywhere. So at some point, whenever they're ready, we can decide where they would want to tie in, and we could install meters if needed, or just redirect where their current meter is. And I think I'm right about the recycled water. You know, you have to get a permit if you're going to change the use. If I'm incorrect, I apologize.
Yeah, I think that's right. Depending on the use. Yeah, I can definitely tell you that the state's not going to sign off on anything that goes right back up to the potential to mix with water that goes out to the consumers.
What, can I chime in here? Why would we convert anything without going to drip irrigation? And the whole problem with spray heads is the same thing you just discussed, is that water ultimately ends up in the drainage, and then it ends up, you know, going out to the river, and that's obviously a no-no. But using recycled water and using drip, if you've got a landscape architect redoing all of the irrigation, I don't know why that's not discussed in the, not only to reduce the amount that's used, but to keep it from overspraying or ending up in the river.
Right. And which was my point. That's the direction they're heading in.
Okay. So.
Okay. Any other, Marty, you're good. Staff is good. That leaves us to adjournment. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this morning, and have a great day.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
You take care.